On this Monday night, breaking news. Baltimore erupts in a violent standoff. Chaos in the streets as riot police clash with roving groups. Officers injured and a city on edge, bracing for a long night ahead. Over 4,000 dead, a rapidly rising toll of death in Nepal amid a frantic search for survivors and a massive rescue mission on Mount Everest. Tonight, the Americans killed and others still missing as their families desperately wait for word. A dramatic day in court as the movie theater massacre trial opens in Denver. For the first time, we hear from the man accused of an unthinkable killing spree. Nightly news begins right now.
From NBC News World Headquarters in New York, this is NBC Nightly News. Reporting tonight, Lester Holt.
Good evening. As we come on the air tonight, we're following breaking news in Baltimore, where a state of emergency has been declared as rioting has broken out on the streets. Violent clashes between police and roving groups have left at least 15 officers injured and turned one West Baltimore neighborhood into chaos. At least two dozen have been arrested so far. This violence comes just hours after Freddie Gray, who died last week under mysterious circumstances after being taken into police custody, was laid to rest. Angry crowds began pelting police with rocks this afternoon as they walked down the streets in full protective gear. Several police cars were subsequently destroyed, and tonight looters have ravaged stores, setting a CVS pharmacy on fire as crowds rampaged through the streets. Tom Costello is there for us tonight. Tom, what's the latest?
Hi, Lester. As night fell, we moved here to downtown Baltimore from West Baltimore because the situation was so violent. We have looting going on in a nearby mall. The governor has now called in the National Guard, and the situation tonight is still very volatile.
Violence in the streets of West Baltimore this afternoon as hundreds of young people faced off against police, throwing rocks and bricks. Police officers pushing back, then retreating with fellow cops who'd been injured. Down the street, a CVS pharmacy looted. Young people pouring out of the store, apparently carrying stolen merchandise. A nearby police squad car torched and left to burn in the street. The officer apparently escaped unharmed. Through it all, police responded with armored vehicles and tear gas.
I don't know who's out there right now. That's something that we'll be able to determine as this event goes on. What we do know is that they're criminals. They attacked officers without provocation. They have no regard for the safety of the people that live in that community. And our officers are working hard to bring about order.
The confrontation's coming just hours after Baltimore police announced they had received a credible threat that various gang members have entered into a partnership to take out law enforcement officers. All of it on the same day 25-year-old Freddie Gray was laid to rest, with religious leaders and Gray's family calling for peace. Gray suffered a fatal spinal cord injury while in police custody. At his funeral today, Freddie Gray's stepfather spoke on behalf of the family.
I need to love and miss you, but also I need to live, because through me, you will live.
Freddie's death is not in vain. After this day, we're going to keep on marching. After this day, we're going to keep demanding justice.
Tonight, Baltimore's mayor spoke out.
It is very clear there is a difference between what we saw over the past week with the peaceful protests and the difference between those protests and the thugs who only want to incite violence and destroy our city.
A promise not to let Freddie Gray's death be forgotten.
No justice! No justice! No justice!
In Baltimore tonight, stores closed down, intersections blocked off, with rioters once again taking to the streets.
This was a day of sacred closure in the funeral. So for us to come out of the burial and walk into this is absolutely inexcusable.
As police stand guard in West Baltimore for yet another night, this city is on edge.
The mayor also announcing late this evening that she is also instituting a curfew that goes into effect tomorrow, and the FBI now joining the investigation into that threat against the officers. Lester?
All right, Tom Costello in Baltimore for us. Thanks. We have on the phone Reverend Jamal Harrison Bryant, who you just saw in Tom's story. Reverend, as we saw, you delivered the eulogy at Freddie Gray's funeral today. You come outside on a day of mourning and you see this, what we're looking at now. Describe your reaction.
I'm overwhelmed with shock, disbelief, and disappointment. The family was very clear, and we have been, that today would be a moratorium that there would be no protests, no marches, no demonstration, as it was the family's request. And so for us to be returning from the burial ground and to be met by this news is completely unnerving, and it's unfortunate not just for this city, but also for the family.
People will look at this and say, what on earth does this have to do with this case of Mr. Gray?
It has absolutely nothing. It does not bring us resolve for justice. It does not change any of the policies that we're after, and it doesn't honor the name of Freddie Gray. And as a consequence, I've been in the streets for the last couple of hours trying to get protesters to go home and young people to turn around. This is grossly unfortunate, and it does not mirror the nonviolent movement that we have been promoting over the last week. And as a consequence, we're having an emergency citywide town hall meeting tomorrow night to bring young people together, to bring calm and to bring focus right. about what should be our emphasis right
Reverend,
now.
Reverend, we thank you for taking the time to speak to us. Thank you so much, sir. And note that as events warrant in Baltimore, we will go back during this broadcast. We do want to turn to the growing humanitarian disaster in Nepal. After that massive earthquake, the death toll now more than 4,000, and sadly, it is expected to keep rising. At least four Americans are among the dead. Others remain unaccounted for. Their families here at home waiting for word. We have several NBC News teams in Nepal, including Miguel Almaguer, covering the urgent rescue mission on Mount Everest. But first, we go to our chief foreign correspondent, Richard Engel, in Nepal's capital, Kathmandu.
This is the moment Nepal was brought to its knees. The quake left thousands dead, and much of this already poor country without power, short of clean water. Centuries-old temples fell. Here in Kathmandu, the historic town center was devastated. Many are staying outdoors in parks and on the streets, terrified of repeated aftershocks. Two more big ones today. Nepal has mobilized its troops for relief work. Volunteers desperately dig by hand. Sarela Tiwari used to come to this very spot to have coffee in the shade of a temple.
It's all my place. It's my country. It's my people.
Mostly, they're searching for bodies in these piles. But sometimes, there's the unexpected. A man pulled out alive today. International rescue teams have finally arrived. But getting outside the capital is a struggle. Roads blocked, helicopters in short supply. NBC's Ian Williams reached one town just outside the capital.
Some of the worst damage is around these narrow alleyways of old Bhaktapur, where there are a few buildings which haven't been impacted by the quake. This one propped up precariously by pieces of wood.
In more remote and inaccessible villages, the toll is still unknown. In a hospital in Kathmandu, we saw workers take away dozens of unclaimed bodies to be cremated. A line of people watched, hoping to identify missing loved ones. Inside the emergency room, every bed was full.
We have received a lot of patients with blunt injuries.
A doctor told us they're working back-to-back shifts.
Hospitals in Nepal are overwhelmed. This one doesn't have nearly enough beds, so patients are left to recover on blankets and under tarps in the parking lot.
The Kowar family of nine is spending a third night outdoors. Sunita's five-month-old daughter died in the quake. Sunita broke her ribs and arm. And like so many here now, this family has no home to return to.
The U.S. Embassy has opened its doors to shelter American citizens here. You'll likely get a cot in the hallway, according to one contractor, but at least it's in one of the safest buildings in this city. Lesser?
Richard Engel tonight, thanks. And as that disaster plays out in towns and villages, there's a major rescue mission underway on Mount Everest to save so many people trapped thousands of feet up. NBC's Miguel Almaguer reports.
Tonight, a scramble into cold, thin air to save the injured and retrieve the dead.
The ground is shaking.
Even on the world's tallest peak Saturday, they could feel the ground rumble beneath their feet.
Whoa, whoa!
Then the avalanche. The moment of impact captured on video. A wave of white no one could outrun.
Come on, Pastor, hurry!
This whole eye was completely closed over, and I think that's where my nose broke because of my body twisted.
Filmmaker Michael Churton was slammed into a concrete barrier.
Just giant plume just rising up. I mean, it was like four Empire State Buildings high, and I yelled for everybody to get down because it's just coming so fast.
Everest stands 29,000 feet high. The mountainside avalanche sent snow and ice cascading through camps 4, 3, and 2, where many climbers are still trapped. No injuries reported in Camp 1, but down below, the base camp was leveled.
It was the most terrifying event of my life.
Churton was with a group of 20. His friend, Eva Girawong, a camp medic from New Jersey, was killed. So was Google engineer Dan Fredenberg. Here he is on the mountain last week.
Here is where all the things we have, all those worms are set up. From boots to gloves to booze.
Tom Taplin, a filmmaker also from California, told his wife his journey would be safe.
Other than high altitude and cold weather, an earthquake was unfathomable to me.
A fourth American climber, Vin Trong, was also killed. Tonight, shock across Nepal and sadness on Mount Everest, where what began as the journey of a lifetime became an unforgettable nightmare.
What does it feel like to be here right now?
I mean, I feel lucky, blessed, and thankful.
That report from Miguel Almaguer, part of our team on the ground in Nepal. We know many of you may want to help and where you can donate. We've put all that information on our website. The long-awaited trial for the 2012 Colorado movie theater massacre began today with opening statements more than 1,000 days after what became known as one of the worst mass shootings in our nation's history. The defense is arguing that James Holm is not guilty of murdering 12 people by reason of insanity. NBC's Jacob Rascone reports.
About 13 miles from where we sit right now, 400 people filed into a box-like theater to be entertained. And one person came there to slaughter them.
The tragedy in Aurora relived in excruciating detail.
Through this door is horror, or bullets, blood.
A fierce battle over the fate of the mass shooter, today dressed in civilian clothes, shackled to the floor. The defense insisting James Holmes belongs in a mental institution.
By the time Mr. Holmes stepped into that theater, his perception of reality was so skewed, was so malformed, that he no longer lived in the world that we live in.
The prosecution unrelenting. He deserves to die for his crimes.
To hold him accountable for murdering 12 people and trying to murder 70 others.
Nearly 3 years ago, the midnight premiere of the latest Batman movie had just started inside Theater 9 when Holmes walked in heavily armed and dressed in tactical gear, shooting indiscriminately. Among the wounded, Marcus Weaver.
I was shot in my right arm.
Marcus watched Holmes gun down his good friend and has suffered with depression and PTSD.
The part that we'll never forget that's always stuck in our head is the shot, the sound of the gun.
The courtroom filled with victims and their family members. The parents of Jessica Gowie moved from Texas to Colorado just for the trial. As the defense warns the jury to keep an open mind.
What is expected to be a months-long trial will give us a rare glimpse into the mind of a mass shooter who spent 2.5 months planning the attack, detailed in a notebook. The trial picks up tomorrow morning with testimony from first responders and survivors. Back to you.
Jacob Rascone tonight. Thank you. Tonight, Loretta Lynch has been sworn in as the nation's first African-American woman attorney general, replacing Eric Holder in the position. Lynch was confirmed by the Senate last week after a months-long delay. Today, she made an apparent reference to ongoing tensions with law enforcement in some communities, saying, quote, we can restore trust and faith both in our laws and in those of us who enforce them. Still ahead on NBC Nightly News, a race against time to find the missing after a storm packing near hurricane force proves too extreme, even for seasoned sailors, with more dangerous weather forecasted. Tonight, over 16 million people are under the threat of severe weather as powerful storms rake across the South. A path of destruction has already been cut from Texas, where a mile-wide tornado touched down. Through the Gulf Coast, where high winds and heavy rain are making for a dangerous combination. NBC's Gabe Gutierrez has the story for us tonight.
powerful winds near hurricane force and relentless rain swept through Louisiana, knocking out power to more than 160,000 people and blowing part of a cargo train off a bridge. Witnesses described the scene when those cars plummeted to the ground.
We hear a loud boom and then boom, boom, boom. It was either three or four times.
Major flooding shut down highways and roads. At New Orleans Airport, 70-mile-an-hour winds knocked out power.
I just landed here at the New Orleans Airport, and the power has just come back on.
More than a dozen tornadoes tore through the South this weekend. Texas, the hardest hit. Daylight revealing some of the destruction. The fast-moving storms pounded the Dallas area, tearing apart homes, leaving fields of debris, and displacing families.
We realized we needed to leave once it started coming to the porch.
With ominous clouds on the horizon.
Oh my gosh, we've got softball-sized hail going on.
One driver west of Fort Worth couldn't escape the destructive hail.
Oh my gosh.
Off the Alabama coast, the desperate search is on for four people still missing after a violent storm tore through a sailboat regatta Saturday. Rescue efforts today were hampered by severe weather. 40 people were rescued, two were killed. Many who were on the water are thankful to have survived.
I've sailed in all over the world, and that's probably the worst I've ever been in.
And it's not over yet. The South now bracing for more severe thunderstorms tomorrow.
Back here in New Orleans, another part of that cargo train is still teetering on the edge of disaster. There were no injuries reported, but right now, engineers are rushing to make sure this area is safe before that next round of storms. Lester.
All right, Gabe Gutierrez, thank you. We're back in a moment with the reason why the government is ordering a major change to the water we all drink. There is a change on the way to the water coming out of your tap. Federal health officials are lowering the recommended level of fluoride in drinking water for the first time in more than 50 years. They say it's because some people are getting too much fluoride because it's also in other things like toothpaste and mouthwash. And they say too much fluoride is a common cause of white splotches on teeth. And the orders at a major restaurant chain no longer come with a side of DNA tinkering. Chipotle says that it has eliminated all genetically modified meat and produce, known as GMOs, from its menu. The FDA insists that GMOs are safe to eat, but experts say that many customers, especially millennials, remain wary of them. That will do it for us on this Monday night. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching, and good night.